Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding. And we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. And I am your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we are going to have part two of our interview with Tony Pearson. Last week, we had part one of our interview with Tony, where he talked about his career. We started off all the way from the beginning when he was a young child, and he just wrote a book called Driven. And in that book, Tony reveals his life, and it was stuff that he has been hiding from basically his whole life, where he talked about how he was abused as a child, first by his father and then by his great aunt, and how he finally escaped that lifestyle and found bodybuilding, first at George Turner's gym in St. Louis, and then he made the bold move of going out to California at only 19 years old. And he made it. He won the Mr. America contest at 21. And last week when we did part one of our interview, we sort of finished off right when Tony won the Mr. America contest. So we're going to continue our interview from that point. And we're going to talk about how Tony had in trouble with the IFBB and he was not allowed to compete with them. And then he went over to Europe and competed in the NABBA competitions. And he eventually won the NABBA Pro Mr. Universe. He also entered the WABA competition, Serge Dubré's organization. And then eventually he was allowed back into the IFBB. And he competed very successfully as a professional bodybuilder. Never won a pro show. Actually, he did win one pro show. But he was very successful with doing the mixed pairs, which started in the early 80s. I think it was 80 or 81. So Tony's going to talk about all of that. So we got a really good interview coming up with Tony Pearson. And when we finish that interview, I am going to read another article from another Iron Man magazine. This is an old Iron Man magazine. This was January 1979. And coincidentally, it covers the 1978 Mr. America that Tony won. So there's actually two articles in here. One's written by Dave Sawyer, who was a big writer for Iron Man back in the day. And the other one is by our friend Roger Schwab. So there's two articles about the 1978 Mr. America. So I think you guys will find this really fascinating and great to hear from. And another interesting aspect of that 1978 Mr. America was Bill Pearl was the guest poser. And I believe this was the, I might be wrong here, but I think it was like the 25th anniversary of when Bill Pearl won the title. And I think he must have been about 48 years old at that time, because he was born in 1930. So they got a great picture of Bill here. I'm looking at it right now from the magazine. It looks fantastic. And I remember when we did our interview with Jim Seitzer a couple of months ago, Jim was in this contest, the Mr. America in 1978. And he said Bill looked amazing. He said Bill could have won the contest. He would have beat everybody. So that's how great Bill Pearl was. All right. Before we get to all of that, though, I do want to mention that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe contest in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning Fat Burner Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banoot and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 when you go to oldschoollabs.com, and you will get 12% off your order. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, and we got some really good feedback off the Jeff King interview that we did 2 weeks ago. So I'm going to read some of those emails. I got a few emails this week, so thank you guys for sending those emails. If any of you out there have any comments about the show, you can always email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. If you've got any guests you want to hear from, I will try to get them up. Of course, we always get a lot of suggestions for Bob Paris, but unfortunately, Bob does not want to do any interviews about bodybuilding for some reason. He wants to let that part of his life go. And also get a lot of requests for Tom Platz, which I'm always working on, but Tom's very busy, and for some reason, that's a hard interview to do. But we might have one coming up with, I reached out to Dale Rueblinger. Dale was the 1982, the first year the MPC started, 1982, he won the MPC USA. He was the first winner of the MPC USA, and he was a middleweight. And Dale won the overall at the USA, and then he went on to win the middleweight class at the Nationals that Lee Haney won the overall. And then Dale went on to win the 1982 World Championships, the Mr. Universe. And then he was a professional bodybuilder. But Dale was a very impressive bodybuilder. I saw him compete at the Central USA contest in 1981 out here in Chicago, where I grew up. I think it was Elgin, Illinois, actually. So Dale was amazing. They called him the man with the hollow bones because he was so big. It was like there was no way he could only weigh 176 pounds. So they said he must have had hollow bones because to be that big. I also tried to reach out to Marty Varanikar, and Marty was a great bodybuilder in the 1980s. Speaking of Jeff King, he competed with Jeff King in the 1983 Mr. America contest. I think Marty won the medium tall class, and I think Jeff won the medium class. So hopefully Barney will be able to do an interview with us also. So I'm going to keep working on some of these old school bodybuilders from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. But if you guys have any suggestions, feel free to email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. Or if you have any comments about any of the shows we did, including this one today with Tony Pearson, please email me and let me know. I always love hearing from you guys. We are in October now, nearing the end of October. It's going to be the end of 2019. Before you know it, we will be on to a whole new decade, 2020. I can't believe another decade has passed us by. It's going by so fast. My training is going good. I have now just completed my second week of my regular training, so my strength went way up in 1 week. I was really weak the first week, but I'm sure I'm going to get progressively stronger each week. So I am feeling really good. It's so great to be back in the gym and training again. And I've got a seminar coming up on November 1st, which will be only in a couple more weeks. And it's out in Houghton, Michigan, which is by the Upper Peninsula. It's at Michigan Tech University, which is a technical college. And I was actually out there, I can't remember, I think it was 2005 maybe. And I did a couple seminars out there. And the second one I did, I filmed my video, which is called Natural Bodybuilding Seminars and Competition. And we filmed the whole thing out there at MTU when I did it last time, and I put it into a video. So if you're interested in that video, you can always contact me, and I can send you that if you're interested in buying that. So I'm going to be going back there, so I'm really excited. I guess Alex, who was one of a student at MTU when I gave my first seminar back in 2005, he is now working for the school, and his daughter is on the committee where they get funds for certain projects. So he had his daughter request money for the seminar. So I'm going to go out there again on November 1st. I'm going to give two seminars. So I'm looking forward to that. So that should be exciting. All right, let's get to some of these emails that I got over this last week. All right, this one was from Steven. And Steven said, oh, goodness, I'm just finishing up the old school Chicago episode. Goodness, GIDA and PHA, peripheral heart training is what that stands for. He said, I love it. I even heard a Bill Sino mention bandied about. I have a lot of old Ironman and Strength and Health mags with Bob and early Sergio. Those guys and their stories are pure gold. We probably would see a much better bodybuilding if Gaida and Chicago had toppled Weider and his Cali of Dreams. But what do I know? I still think I have the Ironman where Gaida was Mr. America and Sergio was either second or he won most muscular. Or it may have been Jerry Daniels who bested Sergio. You have taken up the torch of fashion of Terry Todd and his strength history. Thank you again. Yeah, I think Bob Gaida won Mr. America in 67. No, 66. It was in 66. And I can't remember where Sergio placed, but I do remember Sergio did win most muscular. And I think Jerry Daniels also did beat Sergio. So you're right. So thank you for that email, Stephen. I got an email from my friend Tim. I used to talk to Tim on the old Iron Age when Sean Perrine started that website way back in the early 2000s. And I met a lot of these guys from back then. I still talk to a lot of them on Facebook. But anyways, Tim did not know about my podcast, and he's an old school bodybuilder, so he is loving him. He's listening to him now. And he said, "Hey, John, I just want to tell you how great your podcasts are. I'm really enjoying them so far. I have watched Skip Robinson, Jeff King, and I just watched Leon Brown's. I've got to tell you, Leon Brown was incredible. I could have listened to far more from him. Short story about one of the biggest ass kickings I've ever witnessed in bodybuilding. Ed Jubenville's 1972 Junior Mr. America. Leon wins his class, and then they give him a huge trophy for the overall show. He takes it backstage, and then they call him out for best legs. He picks up the trophy and was about to go back on stage. Juby tells him to stay where he is, and he ended up taking best legs, best back, best chest, best arms, best abs, best poser, and most muscular. It was insane. The guy is truly a living legend. Thanks, John. Take care." All right. Thank you, Tim. Glad he finally found my podcast. I knew Tim would love these. And I got an email from Brad, and he said, "Hey, John, I just want to tell you how awesome I thought Jeff King's interview was. It was amazing to hear how far from the sport he seems to have been and how appreciative he was that we still regard him as one of the greats. That was the one I've waited for some time. I just finished Tony Pearson Part 1, and again, I'm so impressed with how positive he is. He was another who had developed a bit of an enigma status, so it's awesome to hear how open he is and what a great outlook he has. I can't wait to read his book. Keep it up. Your work is tremendous. Now go get Mendenhall and Platts." And then Steven emailed me again, and he said, "Opinion question, showing my age here. 1983 Mr. Olympia, I believe Samir takes it with a Christmas tree, not really seen previously, in extremely crisp fashion. Now at that show, I see Bertel as much more full and pleasing in development. No distension or lower abs. Bertel also has extremely tight waist while showing an amazing upper and lower body development all the way through his soleus, through his traps. Samir is very proportional and dry, yet not as full or as developed. From Samir, we flip to Mass and Haney, yet we miss the lower body development in Haney, particularly in the lower legs. I almost see an argument for Bertel above both Samir and Haney. Am I delusional? I don't see Fox's flaw. Monstrous, almost development, tight waist, not too watery, but still enough to not appear unhealthy. Just curious on your opinion." Well, Steven, I could definitely see what you mean by that. Bertel was at his absolute best in 1983, and the crowd went absolutely crazy for him. It was in October, so it was Oktoberfest in Munich, Germany, and the crowd was nuts, and they were a lot of people were drinking and stuff, but they all loved Bertel Fox because they love size out there. Bertel looks absolutely amazing in some of his poses, definitely, especially his most muscular poses. But he did have some weak points. He wasn't really a good poser, number one. His back development was not as good. That was his absolute peak, I think. That was the best he ever looked. And I guess you could argue that he could have placed higher. Samir was really on point, though, and McAway also was really great. And then Zane also beat Fox, so that's just totally different physiques. So it all depends on which way the judges are going to go. And also, as you said, Lee Haney also beat Bertel. Lee Haney took third, and Frank Zane was fourth. So that's an interesting time, especially like if you go back to the early 1980s, especially this 83 Olympia that you mentioned, because you had so many different types of development. You had McAway, then you had Samir, then you had bigger guys like Haney and Bertel Fox. You still had Frank Zane competing. That was actually his last Mr. Olympia. So it was all depending on what the judges decided to reward. And they were judging in different rounds. They were judging symmetry in the first round and proportion. And then the next round, they were judging more muscularity and muscle size and cuts. So then they also judged the posing round. And I think that's where Bertel kind of fell apart. So, yeah, he definitely could have been higher. And if you look at individual shots of him, he does look amazing. I think Samir still deserved to win. Bertel could have been a little higher. Actually, Bertel did beat Lee Haney in the first Grand Prix they did, which I think was in Germany. And Lee Haney was third, Bertel was second, and McAway was first, and Samir didn't compete, and also Frank Zane didn't compete. So, yeah, if you're looking at the individual poses of Bertel, he does look amazing. But if you watch the video, I think you can see some of his flaws. And then he was never quite the same after that. after 83. He didn't compete in 84. And when he did the Olympia after that, he just wasn't the same Bertil Fox that we knew before. So I think that really was his peak. But that's a good point and a good email. All right, so that's it for our emails. As I said, if you guys want to email me, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. And if you haven't already, if you listen to our show on iTunes, please go on to Apple iTunes and leave a review and also rate the show. I would appreciate that because that helps our ratings. All right, before we get to our interview with Tony Pearson, I also want to mention our other sponsor, which is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they are there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida at 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. And mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. They will give you a free consultation. Plus, they will also give you 20% off your order. All right, so that's it for our opening. Here is part two of our interview with Tony Pearson, where he talks about life after the 1978 Mr. America. Here we go. All right, so that is it. Here is our interview with Tony Pearson, part two of our interview with Tony Pearson, where we talk about his career after he won the 1978 Mr. America. So what'd you feel when you finally dawned on you that you're Mr. America?
There's no feeling to express that. It's just,
yeah.
So excited. Like, oh my God, yes.
And Tufel got so mad he actually walked off stage.
Oh, yes. It was a long exhibition, yes.
Yeah.
He was saying some bad words pretty loudly.
Yeah. What was the reaction of the crowd? Because it was such an upset.
It was a mix of both, boos and cheers.
Yeah.
It was just a rumble.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So then right after that, they had the pose down, right, for the IFBB Mr. Universe.
Right, and then, the judging panel.
Yeah, so now this is in weight classes. They had the American height classes. Then they go to weight classes for the team. And
right.
Tufel leaves. He's gone. So right. Now it's you and Tom Platz in the middleweight
yes.
class. Yeah.
Right. And so then, Tom wins.
Yeah, Tom ends up beating you.
With the new set of judges.
Right, right.
Social University, he wins.
Yeah. So they have AAU judges for the America, and then they have probably right. IFBB judges, right, for the universe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then I go home.
So how did you take that, Tony? How did you feel? I mean, you win the America, but then you don't get a place on the universe team.
I was just numb.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
Shock. You know, you don't know what to think.
Right.
You got to realize you're still talking about this kid.
Yeah, 21 years old, yeah.
Even though I was 21, but in my head, I think I'm still 16.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I hadn't grown up yet. I was still a child.
Right.
So this was a lot to take on. It felt like me versus everybody else. It was just me and me alone.
Mm-hmm.
I had no support system. No one's in my corner.
Right.
It just, what am I going to do after? You know, I went homeless again.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
But didn't Ken Sprague and you go on a Good Morning America, right? Right after the show?
Yeah. The week following, we went on America and I posed.
That was cool.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah.
But after that, things just went downhill.
Really? So you went Mr. America and then you end up being homeless again, you said?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So. Like I said, but you got to believe in yourself and keep fighting.
Yeah. So you reach this high and then you go back down again.
It is a hard fall.
Yeah.
That emotional fall.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I was mentally messed up for a very long time.
And that contest was so controversial. This was unbelievable when I read this in the book. You said that the judges have this meeting and they call the judges and you and they want to, like, debate the contest after it's over, which was unbelievable. I'd never heard of that before.
Trying to take the title away. They wanted to take the title away.
That's unbelievable.
And give it to Ron.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's...
So they went from judge to judge, and they asked them, you know, what do you think? How'd you place it? And then at the end, the guy apologizes to you, and I'm sorry, Tony, for bringing you out here and all this, but that had to be really heartbreaking, really, in a way, right?
Yeah, and the articles they wrote, the unhappiest American.
Right, right.
What had to Santa Claus wear?
Rick Wayne wrote an article about you, right? In Muscle.
Right, yeah. It was depressing. So, but I had to deal with all that.
Yeah.
Personally, I had to deal with that and take all that in, and you can't respond back.
Yeah, yeah.
There was no internet. So you read the article. Imagine reading the article about yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You finally get your dream of winning Mr. America, and then they're criticizing you for winning.
Right.
Yeah. So what made you decide then, Tony, to go over to Europe and compete in the NABBA contest, the NABBA Universe and stuff?
Well, I don't want to give the book away. I've got, you know, the life suspension I was under.
Yeah, yeah.
So homeless, life suspension, and I went and competed in NABBA and WABA.
Okay.
And even Dan Laurie. I was in Dan Laurie's show.
Oh, okay, yeah.
New York. I won the Mr. World there.
Mm-hmm.
Which qualified me to go to London for the NABBA Mr. Universe 1979.
Okay.
Which I placed second to Elulu from Turkey.
Yeah, who's a great bodybuilder.
True. True. But I got some pictures recently, so I go,
oh, yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember that pose down. That was another great pose down because you guys were trading off. You guys were both in fantastic shape.
Right. So... And then, like I said, WABA and NABBA and WBBG. There was nowhere else to go.
Yeah, right.
Or quit.
And by this time, you'd met Serge Dubré, too, right?
Right. I met Serge Dubré and says, well, you'll come compete in the WABA Mr. World, which I did. Mm-hmm. And then I won. And then I went to London 2 years in a row. First time I lost, second time I won, Universe. And I'm under suspension. What can you do?
Yeah, yeah. How did you take that? I mean... I feel good winning Mr. Universe, but then you're probably thinking I should be in the IFBB, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no money coming in. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Were you able to make money over there doing posing exhibitions and stuff?
Yeah, get some exhibitions and seminars over there just to get by, but that ended.
Yeah, yeah.
You win this show and you do the little tour and then what?
Yeah. So what year did you win the NABBA Universe? Was it 1980?
80, yeah.
Okay.
The pro, yeah.
And didn't you compete with Sergio, too? Wasn't that the time he was making his comeback?
Yeah, in Paris, France.
Yeah, how was that?
Sergio Oliva and Berta Fox.
Wow, yeah, I remember that show. That was amazing.
I was happy to be third.
Yeah. What was it like seeing – I asked all the people that have seen Sergio when he was in his prime because he was such an amazing bodybuilder. What was it like seeing him? I mean, you were right on stage with him when he was at his best, really.
Yeah. It was incredible.
Yeah.
Never seen anything like it. The first time I saw him was in 79 in Long Beach.
Okay. Oh, yeah. He competed in that show. Yeah.
Right. At my class. And I went backstage and Sergio was sitting on a stool. It was just Sergio. And I looked down and I'm looking at Sergio Oliva. With his Cuban accent, say Tony, who is it? I'm like, he's nice to me. He actually talked to me.
Yeah.
I go, he knows me. His forearms were like this.
Yeah.
Hands were like this. His waist was like this.
Right.
I'm like, oh my God. I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah.
I mean, his waist was really small.
Yeah.
With all this,
I know.
Forget it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that,
yeah.
back then that was real muscle too. So when he had 22-inch arms, that was 22-inch arms of muscle. Yeah.
Yes, I remember him guest posing at the Gold's Gym Classic. Ken Sprague promoted.
Oh, yeah. 78, mm-hmm. Right?
It was 78? Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember the guest pose was Roddy. It was Sergio Oliva, Lou Ferrigno.
Lou Ferrigno, yeah.
So when Sergio came on stage, he turned to the side. And he planted his quad. It was like two quads. There was a split going down the middle of his quad. It was like this deep.
Wow.
It's like two legs. I mean, huge. So impressive.
Yeah.
Of course, he did all of his famous shots. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And Bertil Fox in that contest was really impressive, too.
Yes, he was really cut. And, you know, they were toe-to-toe. I was just, there's no way. I was a kid still. I was 23 years old.
Jeez.
Going up against those guys.
Right.
People don't know how young I was going up against these legends.
Right, right.
Legends.
Unbelievable. So, how was it when you were doing the guest posing out there, Tony? I mean, were you getting a good reception? Was that a good experience?
It was a great experience. The crowd, you know, a lot of them was so new and it was so exciting with the routine everybody had. So you get standing ovations.
Yeah.
We get standing ovations everywhere I went.
Yeah.
And encore. So you go on stage three times. Almost everywhere. Here in the States, too. It was so new and it was so exciting for people. They're standing on their feet, they're cheering, they're going crazy.
Yeah.
And then lately, you go to contests like...
I know. I try to tell people how it was back in the day, and it's hard to describe it, you know?
You can't describe it. I mean, they're cheering it like crazy, like a rock concert.
Right, right.
That's how excited they are, yes.
Yeah.
And then to come back, if you're in great shape and you're not opposed, encore, more, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Never where I went.
Yeah. I went to the first Mr. Olympia I ever went to was in 77, the one Zane won in Columbus. And the crowd there was like a Beatles concert. People were standing on their feet screaming. Grown men are screaming.
like a rock concert.
He's right. It was just amazing. And I go to shows today and it's like no one stands up anymore. No one's going crazy.
No, and they're like, yeah.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. I went to Australia to guest host, and this kid, he's still talking about it. And I changed the music from Michael Jackson to Prince. Kiss, the song Kiss.
Yeah.
And he goes, man, it was like a rock concert. The place rocking.
Yeah.
You pose, and the whole place was just rocking.
Yeah.
I remember that. It was like a rock concert.
Yeah, yeah.
Like maybe 7 minutes nonstop.
Unbelievable.
You're just going crazy. Yeah.
So you had to really be developing your posing skills too when you're doing all this, right?
Yes. Yes. The more you practice, the better you become.
Mm-hmm.
I had the pleasure of working with Jimmy Caruso.
Oh, yeah.
In Toronto. And when I was there guest posing, and he spent 3 hours with me.
Posing? For posing?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Feet here, your toe here, you bend that knee, you drop your hip, and you turn this way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow, yeah.
Taught me all this within 3 hours, and I pick it up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like I said, the more you practice, and everyone's copying everybody else, you got to be unique, create something of your own.
Yeah.
Your signature poses.
Yeah.
Zane did it. I've tried to do it. A lot of guys, Arnold has it, poses you know, without looking at their face, you know who they are.
Right, right.
They're your poses.
Now, you mentioned Prince and Michael Jackson, but I remember when I was reading your book, you said a lot of the times when you were starting off, when you were in the universe and stuff, you were posing a shaft.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was the most popular song at the time.
Right, right.
Remember the movie Shaft?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And that soundtrack's Shaft.
That's a great song, yeah.
That was me, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I posed to all the way up until Michael came out.
Yeah, when did that happen? When did you switch over like to the mic? Because they're eventually calling you the Michael Jackson of bodybuilding.
Yeah, I had my nose done. We all know.
Uh huh.
So 1984,
okay.
I had my nose done. And did I want to look like Michael? Kind of, yes.
Yeah.
So I had a nose job, which is unheard of for men, even though Michael had a nose job.
Uh-huh.
Before that. So, yeah, that's when – and then Ricky Wayne was doing an article on me, and he looks at me and goes, you look like Michael Jackson. And he wrote that in the article, and then it just took off.
Wow, yeah. So then you started using Michael's songs when you were posing.
Using, I blew the hair out.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you even did, like, a couple of dances a little bit, you know.
Yeah, did the moves.
Yeah.
It's a show. It's a performance. People
right.
pay to see a show.
Right. Right.
So you have to give them what they want.
Yeah.
So
what year did you finally go back to the IFBB? What year were you finally able to go back in there?
1981. I got reinstated. So I was gone for 2.5 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And what was your first show that you did with them? Do you remember?
Australia.
Okay.
You read about it.
Yeah.
Let's read to figure that part out. Okay. So 1981, and then didn't fare well throughout the whole thing, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay. I'm still standing.
Yeah. Let's talk about the mixed pairs, Tony, because that was really something interesting that's not around anymore.
Right.
Every once in a while I hear people say they should bring this back, you know, because this was a thing where they had men and women posing together. And it was, you guys could create, I mean, not only like a regular posing routine, you can create your own style and you could create artistry, but with a partner, now you have, you and your partner are doing this posing together, which really created a whole new aspect of the artistic version of bodybuilding, right?
Yes, yes. You had to be able to create a routine that's going to complement each other.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you as one, you become one.
Mm-hmm.
Pose precise in the timing, the transitions, even the face expressions.
Yeah.
All these working together, yes.
So tell me how that all started up. It was Ken Sprague's idea, right, from the owner of Gold's Gym.
Yeah, Gold's Gym, 1979 and early 79.
Wow.
Suspended later. He came to me one day and he goes, Mr. Ali's coming up and I want you to guest pose with Lisa Lyon. I go, no, I'm not doing that. I'm going on stage with a girl, pose. Mm-hmm. He goes, I think you should do it. It's a good concept, good idea. And I go, no, I'm not going to do it. So he convinced me to do it, and I talked to Lisa, and we got together. She's an artist. She's very creative. I knew nothing about couples pose. I never heard of it. We never had a girl actually flexing her biceps on stage.
Yeah, because the Miss Olympia didn't start until 1980, so this is 79.
Right. So we were the first. Lisa was the first to flex her biceps and hit the most muscular pose on stage.
Wow, yeah.
Yes. So we came up with a routine, and it went over really well. It went really well. Standing ovation.
Really?
In the middle of the routine, at the Mr. Los Angeles contest back in those days was hardcore people. They were serious about it. It was dead silence. So we're posing, and no one's saying a word. We had a guy who was blowing his saxophone live. We had two spotlights, and the audience was pitch dark. So, you know, I'm trying to set the stage. You can see us up there, pose and transition from pose to pose together.
Uh-huh.
That's one. Dead silence through the whole routine. And I'm saying to myself, what a disaster. Why did I agree to do this? But the moment we stopped, finished the routine, the place exploded.
Wow.
Standing on their feet, screaming, cheering for 5 minutes.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
They were mesmerized when you were doing it. That's why they weren't saying anything.
You don't know what to do. You can't applaud because you don't want to miss something.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah. I get chills from that, yeah.
Yeah.
It was Ken Sprague's idea, not mine.
Yeah, Ken had a lot of great ideas, right? He was a great promoter.
Yeah, but when he told me, I go, this is not a good one. He wanted me to pose with her. I go, no.
Right.
Yeah, so
back then in the gym, Tony, were women working out back in the 70s?
Very few. Lisa was the leader.
Okay.
She came in one day, I want to join the gym. And they signed her up. Lisa's tough. And then there was a few other women trained. I've seen very few. Yes, they worked out, not much. It was a guy's gym. It was guys.
Yeah.
The gym was full of men.
Yeah.
So I walked to the gym one day, and I looked on the wall behind the counter with all the guys' pictures up there, not my picture. I had no titles yet. So I'm looking at the picture at the walls, and Lisa Lyon was up there on the wall. Almost muscular pose, right in the middle of the guys.
Wow.
And I went, oh, my God.
Yeah, people may not remember her, but she was really, I think, one of the first women bodybuilders ever, right?
Oh, she's the first female, yes, bodybuilder.
Yeah.
First IBB champion, yes.
Yeah, that's right. She did win a title, right? She won
the title, and then she promoted her own show, IBB.
Okay, yeah.
And I think, who won? Rachel McGlish won, I think.
Yeah, Rachel McGlish won the first Miss Olympia. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it won her show first. And then went on to Miss Olympia, yeah.
Okay.
Lisa retired after that, and yeah, so me and Lisa and I and myself were...
You were the first one.
That was Miss Sprague.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing when again, when you tell people today who weren't around back then how popular women's bodybuilding was, because that was a whole new concept with women having muscles.
Yes.
And it just took off. I mean, it was on national television. It was like it was like the big thing. And the women then, they're not even as big as the bikini competitors are today. You know, they weren't developed at all.
Exactly. But they had a little bit of muscle.
Yeah, they had a little bit of muscle, but they were pretty, and they all had great posing, and it was very attractive, and it was a great sport back then.
It was, yes.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about the mixed pairs. When did they start having competitions for that then? You guys did the first exhibition in 79, and then?
So 1980, the following year. The following year,
okay.
Chris Dickinson, he won the first two.
Okay.
Dickinson, yeah. He had Lynn Cartwright and who was his other partner? He won 2 years in a row.
Okay.
And then Wayne called me and said, we want you to compete in mixed pairs. I go, okay. And with Shelley Rule.
Right.
She's Northern California. I go, okay. So I got together with Shelley Rule and came up with a routine. I have to give him credit, and his name is John Brown. You know who that is?
Oh, yeah, sure, John Brown's a legend.
He put together the routine for us.
Did he really? Yeah.
Yes, the first one. And from there, we kind of took it on our own. We won two in a row, 2 years ago.
You and Shelley won two in a row?
Yes.
Okay.
So John Brown was the first one, said, this is what you guys need to do, transitioned here.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to figure this out.
Okay.
So when Carla Dunlap and I got together, Carla pretty much, you know, she's a swimmer, synchronized swimmer.
Mm-hmm.
She's an artist. You know Carla Dunlap.
Oh, yeah, sure.
She did most. We won twice. I had a little bit of input, but she pretty much put together the routine.
Was this right around the time she won the Olympia in 83?
She won 83. We won mixed pairs 84.
Okay.
I think her and I kind of put the routine together. But in 88, in Nice, France, we had one night to get the routine together.
You and Carla.
We flew over. The show's tomorrow. We don't have a routine yet. We go to the gym, all the guys working out, competitors, and we put together the routine in front of them. Yes.
That's amazing.
Videotape it. She goes, study it all night. So, yeah.
And that was in Nice, France? That had to be a great contest.
Yeah, it was a great show. 1988, that was the last one.
That was the last one? Okay. Yeah. And you were with Tina Plackinger also 1 year, right?
Plackinger won in 85 in Toronto, and Juliet Birdman.
Oh, that's right.
Toronto in 86.
Okay. How many did you win, Tony?
I won six. I lost one.
Wow. Won six. That's amazing. And one of the things I got from reading your book, which really brought me back, you know, to the 80s and stuff, was how much television coverage there was for all these big shows. Like, the networks were there, and they were covering it. Like, a lot of times when you'd be on stage, you would hear the guy who was the commentator, right, talking about you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Chris Dickens was a commentator. Chris Dickens, he was a commentator.
Yeah.
They did all and Rachel. Even Lisa Lyon was commentating a lot.
Oh, really?
Even Carl Dunlap, yeah.
Okay.
So NBC, ABC, Wild World of Sports World, mainly, I think CBS sometimes, yeah. ESPN, yes.
Mm-hmm.
All was covering it, yeah.
Yeah.
We got a lot of exposure. Especially in mixed pairs. They would show the same show three times within 1 year.
Wow, okay.
Showing it.
Yeah.
It was in demand.
Yeah.
I think people wanted to see it because the guys were not that big and the girls, you know, had great bodies, and it's entertaining to watch when it different routines, different music. So it's really a performance, like ice skating and figure skating.
Right, right.
Thing.
Yeah, it just made me think like how popular bodybuilding was and how it was so accepted by the general public when I was reading your book, you know.
Yes, it really was.
Yeah, those days are – that doesn't happen anymore. We don't get that kind of coverage anymore.
No. I mean, I'm fortunate to be in that situation with a phone call from Wayne to get it started.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So I did seven – from 82 until 88, I was in every year competing in it. So
Yeah.
But I got a lot of publicity, which helped.
Helped your guest closings and stuff, right?
Hosting seminars, yes. Yeah.
So, and you mentioned earlier in the interview, you mentioned going back to St. Louis, and a lot of your relatives that you were estranged from now, they were following you because they saw you on TV, right?
Yes. Yes. My family always saw me on television.
Yeah.
My son came to the Olympia in 84 in New York, and she was there as six. Yeah. So,
yeah.
They don't understand it, you know, my family, you know, what is bodybuilding. My dad used to always say, go get a job. A few times I see him. Why did you want to lift weights? Get a job. So.
But even when your mother remarried and her husband was following you, right? He'd always buy the magazines that you were in.
He had every magazine that I've ever been in.
Yeah.
Some of them. I didn't realize I was in it. He goes, have you seen it? No. I don't know how he found it. Yes. He was my biggest. He passed away. Yeah.
Yeah. But that had to feel good knowing that you were making an impact. I mean, they had all had to think, wow, you came out of this, you know, bad environment and you made it in a way, because now you're on TV. You're on TV, you're in the magazines, and you were a star.
Yeah, yeah. They were proud.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still is.
What was first Mr. Olympia you did?
84, New York.
In New York, okay.
Yeah, and then 85, Belgium.
Yep, I remember that one, yeah.
Twice.
Okay.
Twice.
Yeah. And you did also the Arnold Classic, right? 1990?
Only did it once, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I came in six. Yeah. So great show.
What was your standing in the bodybuilding? I mean, you weren't winning the Olympia or you weren't in the top six, but you still had your own persona, right? And you had your own posing routine, and you had to still be highly regarded in the sport as one of the top pros, right?
I think I had a good following. I mean, because they know I was going to be in shape, and they know I'm going to perform. So I think that helped a lot.
Yeah.
I think I was making top five, but I was performing.
Yeah. And you did win one pro show, which was
in Denver.
Denver, right. Okay.
83, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
How did that feel to finally win an IFBB pro show?
It was good. Good feeling.
Yeah.
I don't want to go down that path.
Right.
It was a good moment.
Yeah, yeah. So when did you finally decide to end your career, Tony?
Well, you know, the wrestling, the WBF.
Oh, that's right. You were part of that, too. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Right. 19, Tom Platz called me. I was in Germany, and he says, hey, man, Vince McMahon, the WBF, we like guys who can perform.
Mm-hmm.
So charisma, and we want to offer you a contract. So, yeah, I was doing nothing in Europe. I wasn't competing at IFBB. I was just sitting there doing nothing. So, yeah.
Were you living in Europe at the time?
Yeah, at the time, yes. So okay. Doing nothing.
Yeah.
So I took the offer.
Yeah, how did that go with the WBF? They were offering pretty good money then for back then, right?
It was good. Yeah, it was good, but only for 2 years it lasted.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a good 2 years. It was fun. It was, you know, it was entertainment based.
Right, right. It wasn't like a real contest.
It was a bit of both.
Yeah.
But it was a show.
Uh huh.
We all had characters. I'm the Jet Man, and Aaron Baker was a dark angel, and you know, David Dirk we lost, and Wild Child.
So the Jet Man, they got that from your last friend.
Yes.
Yeah. You sort of advised them on that, right?
Yes, I said. Wide lats, like wings. No, that was good. It was fun. It was fun.
Yeah. So when that ended, then you decided to quit your bodybuilding.
Yeah, it was time.
Yeah.
Well, you know, after 20 years.
Right. Right.
It was time to go.
Yeah.
And the guys were getting bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. Right around that time.
Yeah. Dorian Yates came in. And Lee Haney was there, and I didn't want to get bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's for me, I got to stay within who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Small waist, small bones, small joints, you know. I'm not a big guy.
Right.
On stage, I project size because I know how to present, hit the poses, and create the size thing. I'm not a big guy. Never was.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a big guy. I always said I just want to be big enough to win. I'm good.
Yeah. Well, too, like you said, too, when you started, I mean, when you saw the guys on TV when you were a kid, it looked like artistry, you know?
Right, like an art, like a piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't see myself waist getting bigger, because if it happened, then I'd lost my physique.
Right, right.
Not a fit guy. Aesthetically, the hips got to be small, the waist small. Then when you flare out, the size comes.
Right.
If you're in shape.
Yeah.
So it's an illusion.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask your opinion, Tony, about, you know, the current way it is with all the different divisions. Now, it seems like if you want to have an aesthetic physique, you got to go in classic physique. If you want to be a huge bodybuilder, then you go in open bodybuilding. But back in your day, in the 70s and the 80s, it was like all in one. There was only bodybuilding. So the judges had to make a decision on if you had an aesthetic bodybuilder like yourself or Frank Zane, and you had a mass monster like Bertel Fox or one of the other big guys, they had to decide, you know, who was better, all on the same stage.
Yes, yes. They had to make a decision who's going to be the favorite.
Yeah, yeah.
For that day, yeah. So, I mean, you have your physique and that's all you have. I mean, you can't change it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, you know, you can't pack on all this mass. But I knew by changing my, getting bigger would destroy my physique. I knew that.
Yeah.
And I, it was time to go.
Well, it seemed back then, too, the judges would reward people who were aesthetic, you know, like yourself and Frank Zane, yeah. Muhammad Makaway, Samir Banood,
yes.
Guys who were not huge guys, but they had great symmetry, great aesthetics, and they would place high or win shows.
Yes, quite often.
Yeah.
I was very fortunate to have a super small waist.
Yeah.
That helped me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I said, I was not the big, I was never big.
Yeah.
They used to call me skinny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I go, okay, we'll see about that on stage tomorrow. That's all I would say.
Right. Well, you were from an era where a smaller guy could beat bigger guys. You know, like you win the America at 180 pounds.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, look at Danny Padilla. He's a small guy.
Right.
Yeah. He's great physique.
Yeah. Do you think bodybuilding lost its artistic appeal when it went toward the mass monster route in the 90s?
Personally, I'm from the 70s. I got to stick with that. 70s, 80s. Aesthetically, for me, it's the most beautiful thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I prefer.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all I know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, to see somebody that's super big, it's like, wow, you know.
Yeah.
Remember Pete Kukowski was a big guy.
Oh, huge, yeah.
Remember?
Sure, yeah.
Yes, he was big, and I was in awe. Like, wow, he's huge.
Yeah.
Kenny Waller was a big guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but for me, I'm not a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was judging, I would be looking, because my preference is me,
mm-hmm.
to me.
Yeah.
When I see Samir, Muhammad Makaway, or Ben Fato,
mm-hmm.
or guys, I'm going to be judging along those lines.
Yeah.
There's a similarity I can relate.
But I think about that nowadays because you know, when you see these contests nowadays, they're like, okay, like people will distinguish it now. They'll say, well, that guy's classic. That guy's open. And a lot of old school bodybuilders like you and me will say, well, classic is bodybuilding. It's not a different division. It's all bodybuilding.
It's all bodybuilding. That's true.
Yeah. And if you look at how the judges judge back then, they had to be pretty good judges, you know, because they had to take into account everything in a physique, not just muscle mass, but also aesthetics and symmetry and definition. Posing was so important back then, you know. So they had to take into account all of that. So you had a guy like McAway, and he beats Bertel Fox, you know,
right.
who might both be at their best. Because they had to take into account all of that. They didn't say, oh, no, this guy's over here, he's classic, and then this guy's over here, he's open. It was all had to be taken into account.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I'm thrilled with the class of physique guys. I mean, they're it's old school bodybuilding. That's all it is.
Yeah, right, right.
And mandatory poses, create a routine.
Mm-hmm.
So.
How do you feel about the posing today, Tony? Because you were such a great poser and you were very innovative, you know, not only with your own routines, but also with the mixed pairs. That seems to be sort of a lost art also, doesn't it?
Well, I think they took that part out. I mean, class of physique is mandatory, but in the open, for the big guys, there's no...
It's not judged. Yeah.
Not judged, no.
Yeah.
So, I have no comment.
Yeah.
What about that? I mean, in class of physique, I go to watch, and I enjoy watching these guys.
Yeah, I do too.
I want to know what they're going to do next.
Yeah.
When's, what, you know, transition's going to do next, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's the whole artistry of the sport is shown when you pose.
Right. And I think that's why television liked it so much, because it's so unique and every guy had something different to offer.
Yeah.
That draws your attention. It keeps your attention.
Yeah.
So, yeah, being on television, yeah, I think that's what helped.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was really the golden age when the general public really liked bodybuilding and they really appreciated it. And it was really a moving art form. You know, you go back to the 70s with Arnold pumping iron, right, and then all through the 80s, it really took off then.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So looking back over your career, Tony, what do you think were the highlights competitively? Which ones really stand out?
Well, when you win,
those
are the highlights.
Yeah.
But when you lose, so I lost more than I won.
Uh-huh.
So that's what keeps me humble.
Yeah.
You go, you won all these titles. Yeah, imagine one. I mean, I've lost.
Yeah.
Even second place, you still lost.
Right, right.
So those are good moments. I think the most fun part I've had was performing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I want to win, and I always train to win.
Yeah.
I go to win.
Right.
But enjoy performing.
Yeah.
I enjoy the stage.
Yeah.
Spotlight. I mean, you got to have fun up there.
And also you got to look back and say, wow, what a journey. I mean, you left home when you were a kid, $75 in your pocket, take a bus out to L.A., and you made it. You made it in what you wanted to do. You know, you achieved success in your sport, and you became a name for yourself.
Yeah. It was a tough road, but yeah. But that's what I'm trying to say with this book, that you can do it. It can be done.
Right.
First, you got to be determined and believe in yourself. Never give up.
Right.
Can't give up. And stop living in the past.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to live for now and for tomorrow. You can't change the past.
No.
So all these young people who are going through stuff and know where to turn to,
mm-hmm.
You got something that you're passionate about and that's going to help you heal.
Right.
That's own bodybuilding. That is boxing, it's gymnastics, track and field, football, whatever it is. That's where you should put your energy into, and don't turn to other things like drugs and crime and all these things.
Right, right.
There's no benefits.
Right, right. So how do you feel about the book now, Tony, now that it's written? You worked on it for 2.5 years. It's finally out now. How do you feel?
It's the toughest thing I've ever done. It's tougher than bodybuilding. Yeah. I mean, mentally and physically, it was draining.
Yeah.
It was exhausting. But I did it because I was determined to do it. You know, everyone said, you can't finish, you're never going to make it. I'll show you.
Was it draining because of the whole process of writing, or was it also because you were digging up the past and finally bringing all this to light?
Both. The past. When you're writing about this and then getting it out and you put it in on paper, you start to relive it.
Okay.
And then other things come up that you have put, buried away. It comes up, even more stuff's coming out.
Yeah.
I mean, flashbacks. Oh, my God, this happened. Oh, no, I forgot all about that. This happened.
Yeah.
So I would wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh, that happened. Oh, man, I got to write this down. So it was very painful to write the bad stuff. Really painful.
Yeah.
It's good to write it. It's good to get it out.
Yeah,
and
right.
It tells something. You know, when I started writing, I was telling people I was writing this book, and I was telling some scenes that happened to me, and they look at me, and then within 30 seconds, they're telling me their darkest secrets.
Hmm.
And that's when I knew I was onto something. I said, wow, just told me your secret. Yes, because I opened up and told them. So it made them feel free to talk.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when you read this book, I had a friend she was reading the book, and she stopped in the middle of it and says, I can't read this. She put the book down. She goes, it brings back my memories. So all your stuff starts to come up. A lot of things relating to a lot of people in here.
Mm-hmm.
There's domestic violence, there's child abuse, there's suicide. There's a lot of things connected here in this book.
Yeah.
That people are going to be like, oh, my God, you know, here's the book.
Yeah, yeah. Hold that up.
So it brings up their own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I told about four people about this, and within 30 seconds, I'm standing there, and they tell me their darkest secrets.
Hmm.
And I go, wow. You know, I'm in shock.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have never told anyone. So there's married couples, there's people who are engaged, boyfriend, girlfriends, that they don't know the dark secrets, though.
Yeah.
They know them, but they don't know all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, and you, in the book, too, you talked about quite a few of your relationships that you had, and you never shared any of that stuff with any of those girls, right?
No.
Yeah.
No. I was determined to take it to my grave.
Hmm.
When I got to California, I said, that's it. No, no, I'm going to find out.
Okay. Was that because you just wanted a whole new life and you just wanted to put that past behind you?
I was embarrassed.
Embarrassed. Yeah.
There was fear. I'm going to be judged now.
Right, right.
What are they going to think of me now?
Mm-hmm.
They look at me in a different light.
Yeah, that's understandable.
So once you tell it, you're okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is what it is. And I had no control over it.
Right. It wasn't your fault at all.
Right. I could see I was a bad guy and I was doing this and doing that.
Right.
And I really get ashamed because I did these things.
Right.
But I was a victim.
Yeah, you're 3 years old. Yeah, when this all started.
I'm 17. I'm still a victim.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not a victim. I'm a survivor.
Mm-hmm. Would you recommend that, Tony, as therapy for people who have gone through things, even if they don't publish a book, just to put it on paper and get it out?
Yes. It's very emotional to put it on paper, and it brings off all these other emotions that you have tucked away, and you feel free.
Yeah.
You start to feel some peace.
Yeah, you release it.
You're releasing it by writing it.
Yeah.
Or to tell someone, speak it out, get it out. You have to speak it.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, in the back of the book, you know, you saw what I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Very last page. That it's, you know, it's your truth.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody has something to tell that they're hiding.
Mm-hmm.
Or shame and embarrassment to tell.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when I arrived in California, I go, that's it. No one will never know. It's a new life.
Yeah.
But it was eating away at me. And I have bouts of depression. So, and you have to figure out how to fight your way through it.
Yeah.
You know, depression is a very, very painful.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know how to fix it. There's no fix. You can go to therapy, but you're still depressed.
Hmm.
People said, oh, it'll be all right. You'll be fine. You'll be great. No, they don't understand.
Yeah.
So it's, and a lot of people have it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's understandable that you went through that because of all those years of trauma. I mean, even though you pushed forward and you were really strong and you moved forward and you competed in bodybuilding and you put all that energy into your training and then competing, it's understandable that years later, it's still with you. It's still going to come back.
Yes, I'm human.
Yeah, yeah, right. I mean, I think that would happen to anybody, you know.
Right. So mentally, you fight as hard as you can. And in the book, I talked about how I couldn't walk at one stage.
Yeah.
So my mind is stronger than my body. So mentally, I push myself beyond the limit. I endured all that pain, physical pain,
mm-hmm.
to achieve what I wanted to achieve. I'm determined no matter what.
Yeah.
Me bump back, hurt this, hurt, who cares?
Yeah.
So at the end of the career, I was crippled.
Hmm.
So I wrote about this. I could not walk.
I was
taking ibuprofen all day long and had the belt on. I couldn't sit down. I couldn't stand up. I was dragging my leg. Complete agony.
And this was all from all the years of heavy training. Yeah.
Yes. I had a very small frame. I was very strong. I was training heavy as I could. And it just damaged.
Yeah.
You destroy yourself. I mean, you train twice a day. Imagine twice a day for 20 years.
Wow. Yeah.
And I was always in shape.
Yeah.
There was never off season for me. So
right.
the leaner you are, the more your joints takes more of a beating.
Mm-hmm.
Tendons and ligaments in your joints. Because you'd be hydrated most of the time.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And still training heavy. So.
Yeah, right. What's your training like now, Tony? Because now you're going to be 62 next year, right?
63.
Oh, 63. Okay. And, you know, I follow you on Facebook, and I'm just amazed that, I mean, you're way ahead of most of the guys that were around back then, except for maybe Robbie and Bill Grant. You know, we talked about those guys. Those guys are still looking awesome, too, in their 70s.
70, yeah, right.
Yeah. But you're still in amazing shape, and you're always lean, and you've done you went back into competition, right, later in life?
2014.
At 60 years old, yeah.
I was 57.
Oh, 57, okay.
So after 18 years of doing nothing on stage, I never stopped training. That, I want to make a point. I never stopped working out. I was still training.
Right.
And I never went back on stage. So 2014, I made a comeback, did the NABBA, won the Masters USA.
Okay.
And in Europe, I did a couple of guest poses with Juliet Bergman again. She was 51, I was 53, we guest posed.
Wow.
She announces, goes, over 100 years ago. Yes, 51, I'm 53.
Yeah.
So guest pose, and I stay in shape for myself. High volume of reps and moderate weights, light to moderate weights, not heavy.
Okay.
I can't be heavy anymore.
Right.
Heavy. And I listen to my body and modify the exercises. And as you age, you have to make the adjustments. I don't miss lifting heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And young guys at the gym lifting heavy around me, and I'm going, dude, I did that when I was 19. You know, showing the old man up.
Right.
You know, I did that.
Yeah.
What? Come back when you're 62.
Right.
I'm just happy to be in the gym.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I train every day, 7 days a week. I do something.
7 days a week, okay.
Yes, there's no day off. And most of the time it's twice a day still.
Really? Wow.
You know, it's light workout. My workout is 45 minutes to an hour each time.
Okay.
The diet is – I have to diet now.
Yeah.
You know, at some point in time I was competing, I could have a piece of cake and a slice of pizza and walk right on stage.
Right.
And shred it.
Yeah.
Pretty good credit. But now my metabolism slowed down, so I'm living on chicken, broccoli, egg whites, and apples.
Yeah.
That's used in yams, sweet potatoes.
Okay.
But that's my diet, basically. And I feel a little red meat once in a while. We'll see, maybe once every 10 days. Not a lot of red meat.
Okay.
Mostly chicken, the egg whites, my protein, veggies, broccoli.
Yeah.
You know. And that's my diet. That's, you know, 5-6 times a day, small meals.
Mm-hmm.
Water, the fruit, apples and maybe some berries.
Yeah.
I really have to watch my diet. That's the only downside when you get sick.
Right. Well, you're always lean now, and you're always in shape. I just saw you at the Olympia a couple weeks ago, and you look fantastic.
I appreciate it. I can still achieve that condition that I had old school. I still get it, but I have to work twice as hard to get it now.
Right.
I have to work hard, yeah.
Do you think that's important, Tony, to always stay lean and always stay in shape?
Yes. For men, to keep the waist as small as you can.
Yeah.
It's important. I'm doing it for my health, for my health.
Yeah.
I'm not competing again. There's no stage left. So
right.
I'm just trying to be healthy.
Yeah.
And it's an addiction. That's all I know.
Yeah, right. It's a good addiction.
I mean, from 1974 to now, I got to go to the gym.
Right.
I'll tell you a quick story. I went home to visit my mom, and she says, oh, you're home. So good to see you. 7 o'clock in the morning, I got my gym bag in my hand. She goes, oh, why don't you just take the day off? I didn't say anything. I just looked at her. She says, go ahead, go to the gym.
See you in an hour.
Don't talk back to me. But I didn't say a word. I just gave her a look.
Yeah.
She goes, just go.
Well, you know, when I look around and I see, you know, the average guy, if they don't have that addiction to physical fitness, you know, once they get to be 40, they usually start to put on some pounds, and then it just keeps getting progressively worse. And, man, the average person nowadays is just really overweight.
They're overweight, yes. And they weigh too late.
Yeah.
Yeah, start early 20s.
Yeah.
I would say for young people, 14, 15 years old, you should be in the gym working out.
Mm-hmm.
Building your foundation.
Yeah.
And the foundation start with your legs.
Yeah.
Not with your chest and biceps.
Hmm. Okay.
Train your legs from the ground up.
Right.
You pull your legs, you would have your legs, keep your legs forever.
Yeah. That's true.
I still have the size to my legs.
Really? Oh, yeah. They say everybody loses that after 40, but you still got it.
I am determined to keep this size of my legs. Right. I do squats. I do 10 sets of squats still.
Do you really? No kidding.
But much lighter weight.
Yeah.
But it's high volume reps, a lot of repetitions.
Right.
Just to get the pump, pump, pump. I do sumo squats, 5 sets, regular squats, 5 sets.
Okay.
I'm doing 15 to 20 reps per set.
How much weight are you using on squats, Tony?
No. I've got 45 on each side. That's it.
45, okay.
But I'm not locking out.
Yeah.
I get down to 90 degrees, and I never stand up.
Right.
So it's tenuous tension for that 20 repetitions.
Right.
It's like your leg could explode.
Yeah.
So that's how I maintain my size.
Okay. Yeah.
In the pump.
Right.
With very little rest in between.
Yeah.
I'm not on my phone. I'm not drinking water.
Right.
I don't have a time clock for 2 minutes. I got 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So.
And you're still doing personal training out in Vegas where you live?
Yes. Still personal training. My website, Tony Pearson. PersonalTrainer.com.
Okay.
So, yeah, still doing that.
Great.
It's City Athletic Club. You know City Athletic Club.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah, that's famous. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Well, Tony, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. And I wish you the best with your book, Driven. I recommend to everybody go out and get it on Amazon because I really enjoyed it. I mean, I know we had this interview coming up, so I had to read it pretty quick. But it was a fast page turner, man. I read the whole thing in 4 days, so. It was really an enjoyable book.
Okay, so you like the book.
I love the book. Yeah, it was great.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Can I follow my Instagram page?
All right, I will.
Tony Pearson, 87.
All right. Yeah, I hope everybody gets the book because it really was a good book, especially all the bodybuilders out there. They should definitely get it.
Yes. I mean, for me, I think any athlete that's in sports, I think I would like for them to read it. Because this is great escape. Sports helps you to heal.
Yeah.
Gives you, no matter what sport you're in.
Right.
So it's, you know, boxing or track and field or whatever, gymnastics, whatever you're doing. I think I would like them to read it because you can survive. You can make it.
Yeah.
Without doing all the bad stuff.
Right. Or anybody who's gone through any bad experiences in their life, this is a great example of how you can get past that.
Yes. Yes. To me, it's kind of like healing. For me, this book is healing. It's healing myself.
Yeah.
That's why I wrote it. And then, like you said before, write everything down. Write it. Write it out.
Yeah, get it out. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yes, all right, sir. Tony. Well, thanks for joining us. Congratulations on the book. I wish you the best of success with it. And it's been a pleasure interviewing you. You're a real legend in the sport. So I'm glad we finally got a chance to sit down and talk.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
All right, Tony. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks for Tony Pearson for spending some time with us and giving us 2 interviews for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I also want to thank our sponsors, Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs, for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I also want to thank all of you who support the show on our Patreon account. If you're interested in doing that, if you want to support a little money toward the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, you can go to the website, which is bodybuildinglegendsshow.com. And in the upper right-hand corner, we have a Patreon link, and you can support the show with any kind of donations that you want to do. I appreciate that, guys. All right. So without further ado, I do want to read a couple articles here from the January 1979 issue of Iron Man magazine. And as you know, if you listen to the show regularly, at the end of the show, I usually read a couple articles from some old bodybuilding magazines, which a lot of you out there maybe have never read these articles before, and I've got them sitting here at home, so I might as well share them with you, because otherwise you'll never see these great articles. Back in the day, we loved reading these articles, so it's a shame now that they're gone because of the digital age. We don't have any more magazines, or they're not as, you know, big as they used to be, so I do want to share these with you guys. All right, so I'm going to read 2 articles, and these are both about the 1978 Mr. America, which is one of the most controversial Mr. Americas ever. The first one is written by Dave Sawyer, and it begins, "Pearson wins Mr. America. I think the competition gets better and better each year, and the younger guys are moving some of the older guys out each year. The prime mover at the 1978 AAU Mr. America Championship in Cincinnati on September 2nd was 21-year-old Tony Pearson, the first bodybuilder to win three national AAU physique titles in the same year. Tony began his winning ways earlier this year by just barely squeaking past Mario Nieves at the Junior Mr. USA contest in San Jose. Then a month later, he was off to Austin, Texas, where he won the Junior Mr. America title. Passing up the Mr. USA in late August, Tony peaked for the Mr. America in Cincinnati, where he virtually demoralized and demolished the competition. And the competition was fearsome. Kent Keene, one of the judges, couldn't believe it. It used to be that the first five or six or seven would be the top competitors, but the quality seems to improve and improve and improve, and now the guys are like 25 deep now. I don't know how many contestants there are total, but the quality is unbelievable. After the prejudging, Richard Baldwin reflected on the intensity of the competition. It was rough. I think this is the best Mr. America contest yet. Anybody who even places can be happy. Placing the contestants was the thing that the seven judges had volunteered to do, a thankless task at best. How is it possible to pick a winner in a contest that includes people like Baldwin, Barile, Jackson, Leonard, Pearson, Perry, Platts, Rodriguez, and Tufel, just to name a few? Fortunately, all the judges were experienced national AAU card holders, and they were able to complete their work in little over 3 hours. Serving on the panel were Mike Graham, Brian Hudson, Kent Keene, Jim Mannion, John Carl Meese, Rod Miller, and Henry Wolfe. Height group prejudging. The first 14 men to be prejudged were in the short group. Ron Tufel and Tom Platts were clearly the front runners, with Carlos Rodriguez a close third. All three men were in top shape, and there was never any doubt that one of them would be the winner. Tufel, of course, displayed the world-famous abdominals to good advantage, while Platts emphasized the awesome power and size of his legs. Rodriguez was noteworthy for his fine symmetry and posing. Three other competitors in the short group, Tony Pandolfo, John Icobelli, and Jim Seitzer, were also very good, and with a year of improvement will be a real threat at the next Mr. America contest. Prejudging the 20 contestants in the medium group was extremely difficult. Competitor Larry Gordon said it all. I feel that definitely the medium class once again is the superior class. It just overpowers the other two classes. While it seemed from the beginning that Tony Pearson would be the winner, a second look at Larry Jackson's fantastic chest and back development and Richard Baldwin's classic symmetry made the whole judging process a lot more complicated. Throw in muscular Larry Gordon, big Bob Reese, and newcomer Ray Mensur, and you might as well flip a coin to determine the winner. However, the judges were leaving nothing to chance, and so there were innumerable callbacks with individual comparison pose-downs between the various men. This is where Pearson was really able to come alive with his powerful, dynamic posing and show the audience just how badly he wanted to win. As Judge Rod Miller later recalled, you could tell by the way he was hitting those poses that he really wanted to win. The tall group was the smallest with only 8 contestants. Veterans Manuel Perry and Clinton Barile led the group, with Gary Leonard and Rod Koontz taking the 3rd and 4th place spots. Frank Wainwright finished in 5th place. Final pose down. At the conclusion of the evening presentation, the judges had to choose between height group winners Tufel, Pearson, and Perry for the overall Mr. America title. Almost immediately, Pearson took command of the pose down, hitting pose after pose in rapid succession. Tufel attempted to compare his outstanding calves with Pearson's admittedly smaller calves. Tony responded by going into several most muscular poses with all body parts flexed to the maximum extent possible. Pearson then appeared to be winning the pose down, but Tufel's fans in the audience were not ready to give up and began to shout, "Tufel, Tufel, Tufel." Finally, when the judges indicated they'd seen enough, announcer John Barzaccini called for their decision. 4 judges voted for Pearson, 2 voted in favor of Tufel, and 1 judge thought that Perry should have won. Tufel was obviously disappointed and he left the stage, as did Perry. But then, in a heartwarming display of sportsmanship which brought forth a tremendous cheer from the audience, Manuel returned to the posing dais and he raised Tony's arm in victory. How Pearson won. Just before the evening presentation, Pearson, who has been training for only 3 years, offered these thoughts on his contest preparation. I started dieting 5 weeks before the contest. I wanted to get ready, and I wanted to lose a certain amount of weight. Then I could start eating and put it back on and stay cut. So the last 2 weeks have been really easy as far as dieting is concerned because I was eating everything, but I still trained 6 days a week. It was really easy until I got here. Then the pressure. I've been in a few contests. I'm used to it now. You can really feel the tension here. It was really building up now. Tony was reminded that he had created a little of the pressure himself by trying to psych out some of the other contestants. I think I've been doing a pretty good job at it, too. You've got to do anything to win. I'll talk, I'll pose, you know, whatever. If I can beat you, I'm going to beat you. Tony's next goal is to win the Mr. Universe contest. He also plans to give posing exhibitions throughout the year, and he promises that he will always be in top shape whenever he appears. All right, now in this part of the article, it says how the judges voted. So Judge Graham put Pearson in first, Perry in second, and Tufel in third. Judge Hudson put Perry in first, Tufel in second, and Pearson in third. Kent Keene put Pearson in first, Perry second, and Tufel third. Jim Mannion put Tufel first, Tony Pearson second, Emmanuel Perry third. John Carl Meese put Tufel first, Pearson second, Perry third. Miller put Pearson first, Tufel second, and Perry third. And then Wolf put Pearson first, Tufel second, and Perry third. And then the official results, 1978 Mr. America was Tony Pearson. Most Muscular Man was Tony Pearson. Best Abdominals went to Ron Tufel. Best Arms went to Manuel Perry. Best Back went to Larry Jackson. Best Chest went to Larry Jackson. Best Legs went to Tom Platz. Best Poser went to Tony Pearson. And in the short group, Ron Tufel was first, Tom Platz second, Carlos Rodriguez third. In the medium group, Tony Pearson first, Larry Jackson second, Richard Baldwin third. And then in the tall class, Manuel Perry was first, Clinton Barile was second, and Gary Leonard third. And what's also interesting, they have the height and weight of the competitors. Ron Tufel was 5 foot five, 184 pounds. Tom Platz was 5'6", 196 pounds. He was 12 pounds heavier than Tufel. Carlos Rodriguez was 5'6", 163 pounds. Jim Seitzer, who was in sixth place, was 5'6", 181. And Dave Mastorakis was 5'5", 180. Medium group, Tony Pearson was 5'8", 181. Larry Jackson was 5'9", and he weighed 201. So Larry Jackson was 20 pounds heavier than Tony Pearson at almost the same height. Richard Baldwin was 5'8", only 172. Larry Gordon was 5'8", only 185. Robert Reese was 5'8", he was 209. And Ray Mensur was 5'9", 222. Ray Mensur was a monster. And then in the tall class, Manuel Perry was first at 6 feet tall, 228 pounds. Clinton Barile was second at 5'10", 208 pounds. And Gary Leonard was in third at 5'11", 201 pounds. Interesting how the weights are so much different than the guys are today. All right, so now we got another article here from, called Another Viewpoint of Mr. America by Roger Schwab. Roger is a friend of ours. He has been on the show many times, and I always appreciated his articles when he wrote about the Mr. Olympia, where he was often the head judge. All right, Roger says, there were two primary motives for my attending the 1978 Mr. America contest in Cincinnati on September 2nd. Historically, this was the inaugural Mr. America since the official merger of the AAU-IFBB forces. The affiliation assured that all the leading amateur athletes would be present, and thus the competition staggering. My primary reason for being in Cincinnati was to view perhaps the farewell appearance of Bill Pearl, who was victorious in this event 25 years ago. Speculation was that Pearl, now 48 years old, had trained for one whole year in specific preparation for this event. Rumor had it that Pearl was in shape, in unbelievable condition. There would be no dramatic anticipation. When the curtain opened at the start of the show, there was Bill Pearl on the dais looking finer than he did 25 years ago. Let me reflect for a moment back to the spring of 1964 in Philadelphia at Town Hall. Promoter John Fritschke at his annual Mr. Greater Philadelphia contest had brought in Bill Pearl from California to guest post. Bill Pearl posed before a full house that night of enthusiasts who realized that they were seeing, perhaps, the best in the world. In an unforgettable display, laced with the glare of flash bulbs exploding nonstop, Pearl presented all he had to offer before a standing audience, wildly applauding. In Cincinnati this night, the scene was identical. Pearl was magnificent. He displayed great roundness and mass of muscle and beautiful skin tone. Though Pearl does not present the vascular defined appearance of the 1970s physique, and though the posing routine is much more indigenous of the 1960s, it is of this opinion that Pearl was the class of the physiques appearing that evening and would have won this event tonight if circumstances would have allowed. There are no repeat winners in the AAU Mr. America competition since 1941. Wow, that's interesting. So then Roger goes into the different classes. The short class, the contest itself was competed in three height classes. The battle in the short class narrowed to three: Ron Tufel, Tom Platz, and Carlos Rodriguez. The pose down between Tufel and Platz was competition in its purest form. Side by side, these men pulled out all the stops to outmuscle the other. I thought that Tufel was the more finished of the two physiques. Ron is a great competitor. He is very intense on stage, hyper winning and only winning. It is why he is here. Platz has vastly improved over a year ago, especially in his torso development. He looks so thick, maybe too thick. I feel that he appears somewhat bloated in his upper abdominal area and face. What Platz relinquishes to Tufel in sharpness and separation and muscle, he makes up for in mass and overall appearance. By the slightest of margins, Tufel's muscularity outweighed Platz's size. For potential alone, Platz seems to have no bounds and will probably be favored in next year's event. Tonight, his moment of glory was to come later. Carlos Rodriguez was third in this class, and it's hard to fault his symmetrical physique. He seemed somewhat lighter and smaller than the top two, which probably accounted for his placing. Posing alone, he was at the top or near the top of the class. There were so many top men in this class, the judges must have had fits. If the placings are made known to the public, the divisions of the men will probably be by the narrowest of margins. Sammy Willis was the most fluid poser of the entire contest. He probably placed well, but was not in his finest shape. Neither was Dave Mastorakis, who, if he ever gets it all together, will someday win this class. Dave is a miniature Hercules with great mass and size, who invariably enters competitions just a shade too smooth. While every physique in this class was way above the norm, special mention should be given to Tony Pandolfo, who always looks good, and to newcomer Bob Jockowitz and John Icabelli. Good raw potential if he learns how to display it. The medium class. If the short category was stocked with class, the medium group was at least its equal. Judging this class must have created migraines. Tony Pearson was awarded first place in this class, a decision which was at least enhanced by a posing routine which could only be described as shocking. Standing relaxed, Pearson's physique is vulnerable. It is not one of aesthetic lines and grace. When he poses, however, everything seems to come together, and the resultant impact is powerful. He had to be devastating to defeat his competition. Larry Jackson, who placed second, had the most densely muscular upper body in the class. He facially resembles Bill Grant somewhat, and he has that same heavy musculature. Richard Baldwin has what is generally described as a fine, graceful physique, the type the general public can identify with. Tonight he appeared a little drawn, as if in a bit overtrained. He looked slightly better several weeks earlier at a heavier body weight. He was a popular third-place winner. Several other men could easily have placed without too much commotion. Ray Mensur is still searching for the final touches toward an unbeatable physique. He has a tendency to get too heavy in the off-season, and he has trouble getting it all together at contest time. Interesting to note that Mensur did win the next year in 79. If Bob Rees learns a secret to dieting, his great shape will make him very formidable in the coming years. There is great potential here, especially superb deltoids. Honorable mention should be given to Larry Gordon, who was much better than before, and old, reliable Eddie Love, who was always in top shape. I was disappointed with C.F. Smith. He could probably win this class with his potential. I don't know why he comes in so smooth. Maybe he feels it's healthier. If space allowed, everyone in this class should be mentioned. They were all that good. The tall class. The results of the tall class demand criticism. When he first appeared on stage, it was obvious that Manuel Perry was not in the hard, muscular condition he was in a year ago. He was heavy and smooth, albeit with a great shape and size of muscle. I was disappointed as I felt that Perry was the pre-contest favorite for the overall title, and with great class and charisma, he would have been a fine Mr. America. Clinton Barile was back in competition, and he finished second. Clint appeared more densely muscular, if not quite as vascular as in past competitions. Gary Leonard was a major surprise of the evening, with the exception of Bill Pearl. Leonard has great shape of muscle and very pleasing development. With more back work and an understanding of physique display, he will win this class next year and possibly the whole contest. Remember that name, Gary Leonard. Ron Kuntz was a greatly disappointed fourth place finisher, opinion since the only first three places were announced. Although not as sharp, especially in the torso, Kuntz should have placed higher. Bill Knuckles and Frank Wainwright were respectable competition, and Knuckles especially could move up in future competitions. The climax of the competition culminated in the pose down of the three winners, Tufel, Pearson, and Perry. Tufel and Pearson went at it head-to-head as they had several times before. Not to discount Perry, but he was decidedly a distant third. Two of the most contrasting physiques imaginable, throwing most muscular poses before the judges and the anxious audience. Tufel had defeated Pearson earlier in the year at the Mr. California contest, and most opinions anticipated a repeat tonight. It was many agonizing moments before the MC stunned the Cincinnati Music Hall. Tony Pearson is Mr. America 1978. Tufel was stunned, nearly uncontrollably on stage. Pent-up emotion suddenly unleashed. For a moment, there was silence. Then some low-keyed objection from the audience. This subsided into applause as Tony Pearson stood looking confidently as Mr. America. As physique audiences become more knowledgeable, results will accordingly bring more critical observation. How do you select between a Tufel and a Pearson? If you question seven different judges, you will invariably receive seven separate answers. The men who judge these events are highly qualified. They are, however, as human beings, ultimately governed by subjectivity. Audiences will never totally be satisfied, nor will there be hardly any unanimity of judges serving on the same panel. Tonight, Tony Pearson at his best was selected by the judges over Ron Tufel at his best. It must have been a very difficult decision. In somewhat of an anticlimactic closing, the judges chose the USA team, which will compete in the IFBB Mr. Universe contest in Acapulco later this year. The team was chosen with weight classes as the criterion. For some reason, a different set of judges presided. Lightweight winner was Carlos Rodriguez. Tufel and Platts, though competing in the evening short group, were over the 165-pound weight limit used by the IFBB in international competition. Tom Platts defeated Mr. America Tony Pearson in a pose down for the middleweight berth on the team. This must substantiate the above observations on subjectivity ultimately prevailing. Mike Mentzer, with great respect from all the competitors, had no challengers in the heavyweight spot on the USA team. All right, and that is it. So those were two great articles by Dave Sawyer and Roger Schwab in the January 1979 issue of Iron Man magazine. All right, that is it for the show, folks. I hope you enjoyed it, and we will be back next week with another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Take care.